B-Pod Studios.
Thanks for choosing Felger and Maz to entertain and inform you in the afternoon.
E-class.
Felger and Maz. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Far corner, here's Ennis down low. 9. Krejci flipped it ahead. Marchand, it's flipped ahead. Nordstrom over the line, chipped it toward the net. He scores! With 2 seconds remaining. Here in regulation, the Boston Bruins with an empty netter from Joakim Nordstrom have taken a 6-4 lead over the Maple Leafs here in TO. The horn is going to sound. The Boston Bruins record their first road victory of the playoffs, 6-4 over the Toronto Maple Leafs. This series is back on serve, each team with 2 wins, and Game 5 heading back to Boston.
Judd Surratt on the call here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Back to your phones as promised. RJ in New Hampshire on the Bees. Go ahead, RJ.
I was just curious. Guess here when I think it was Jack, because I was watching Nesson, but he had mentioned the fact that the Maple Leafs had, like, I think 30-plus instances when they entered the zone and they stayed there for more than 30 seconds compared to the Bruins. They only had 7 chances. And, I mean, I know defense wins championships, but that just seems like we're,
playing with fire? Yeah, playing with fire. Yes, RJ, thank you. It's a good stat. I did not hear that stat. But it felt that way. I think Toronto took it to you a little too much for your comfort, to the point where I'll say it again. If that's the way that, if last night is the way the series is going to go, I don't think you're going to win it. It's not your game. They took it to you more than the other way around. And just they're just more offensively talented, right? They have more guys. And those flurries, that is no way to live. I don't think you're going to survive it. If you did last night, are you going to survive it the next 3 games? If that's how each of the next 3 go, I don't love your chances.
So my big complaint in the series, and again, this is the whole thing now, not just last night, Toronto's dictated the pace. Like, and I'm a big believer in that. I mean, I say pace in every way imaginable. They won Game 1, they won Game 3. No, the Bruins have not led at any point of this series. Now Game 5's in Boston. So, like, you know, to me, this is the emphasis tomorrow. Take control of the series. They haven't done that yet.
Here's Ed in Rhode Island. Go ahead, Ed.
Yeah, I just got to let you guys, I think, first of all, you made very good points, but you got to realize they added Tavares, a top 10 talent. We made our team better by having a great backup goaltender, but it does nothing for us in the playoffs. Of course we're going to have a harder time with Toronto than we had last year. They're a better team for the playoffs. They added a strong defensive defenseman. We've only got undersized defensemen to come in when there's injuries. Those are problems.
Ed,
so we're going to have a tough series.
Those are excellent points. And they're a year older with a little more year experience and more understanding of what it takes, a little tougher, Murray. So, yep, Tavares, Muzzin, experience. Yep, they're a tougher out this year, no question. What else did you think, Murray? You were about to say something before?
No, the other thing, too, so one of the things that has me a wee bit concerned, because, again, I am big Jim Worry. As much as I love that Cassidy switched things up and there was some good gamesmanship on his behalf last night, I wonder if that's now going to provoke changes on the other side. Because Mitch Marner sucked last night, and it feels like they should switch things up on Toronto's end.
Huh. Did Mitch Marner suck? I didn't get that sense. He did?
He was a -3 last night.
I guess he was.
I mean, in fact, it was like a complete flip from the previous game. Tavares, Marner, Hyman, Zaitsev, and Muzzin, all -3 for the Leafs. -3, all of them. And the Bruins were the opposite, right? Bergeron,
right.
Chara,
right.
You know, all those guys were +3.
So I don't know if I'd necessarily mind him switching it up. I thought that on balance, Tavares, Marner's had the better of you so far. And I mean, you know, again, not last night necessarily, although Bergeron is still not the same.
He's not quite there.
But Bergeron's not the impact guy in this series that he's been for this team. He's just not.
So that to me is, again,
I would keep Tavares right on Bergeron if I'm them.
I mean, so if you're both teams, though, do you take a draw there?
So if I'm the Bruins, no.
I'm talking Bergeron, just Tavares, just those two guys. In other words, if Marchand and Pasternak go off.
Yeah.
But Bergeron is just neutralizing Tavares.
Sure, fine. Yeah.
I would take that if I'm the Bruins.
Sure. But that's sort of an adjustment, in my opinion, of that. Going in, you would have to say Bergeron has to win that.
Correct.
But, yeah, tip your cap to Toronto and Tavares. I mean, you just didn't realize Tavares is an elite guy, and he's not just a fancy-pants offensive player. He is a 3-zone player. But, again, he was the -3 last night. Ronnie and Braintree on the Bees. Go ahead, Ronnie.
Hey, Mike, two things. That thing with Marshawn with the stick happened when he offside and he shot at the goalie.
Okay, that's right. There was exactly right. Thank you, Ronnie. That did happen.
Yeah. And then the other thing, I think they missed Kevin Miller big time behind that on that defense there. What do you think?
Okay, Maz, I know you have a thought about this and the size of the Bruins defenseman.
So I just don't think they're big enough back there. Now, look, again, in this series, they're probably going to be able to get away with it because I think speed's more important, and I've been pleasantly surprised. I'm not a huge Grizzly guy, but I think Grizzly's actually been okay in this series. And when he gets the puck, he's got burst. So you can see it. I mean, and he's playing with as much grit as he can. It's not his fault that he's little.
Meanwhile, how do you feel about Krug?
Oh, Krug to me is lost.
So this is like...
And Brandon Carlo, too, I think has been bad.
Carlo's had a tough time,
so
too.
He's another one who's a little bit more of a plotter. He's, you know, the speed catches up to him like it would Chara. But Krug, this should be his kind of series. Where's all the Krug people? Where are all the Krug people? I know you're out there. Where are you?
So I think he's still in a fog, you know? Like, he came back from that concussion. You know,
he's a minus player as usual, and I'm not seeing any of that offensive catalyst thing that he gets credit for. He hasn't been a catalyst for anything.
No, he hasn't. In fact, Grizzlick's been more of a factor offensively than Krug has. So I don't know. Like, I go back.
So back to Kevin Miller, they could use him.
Yeah, they need the size back there.
Him over John Moore or him over Steve Kampfer? Yes, you could use Kevin Miller.
I mean, I just think to win a championship, you got to have big defensemen that can, you know, police the front of that net.
Steve and Bill Ricca. Hi, Steve.
Hey, what's going on? Red Sox last year's playoff shirt said do damage. They have to change it to get hungry because they have the roster and it will get better. In Toronto, they have no doubt been the better team most of the series, right? Tomorrow night, Coach Cassidy has a chance to show Coach Grabcock what he got, you know?
Okay, Steve.
they needed six goals.
Yeah, no, I know. I agree with you. I think Toronto's been the better team. If this were a boxing match and it went to the cards, I think you'd lose the decision. For what that's worth, that means nothing. Okay, so, but I'm just saying, I think that if it continues that way, I don't love your chances if you're getting outplayed for the balance of a seven-game series to win a seven-game series. It's possible. But, I wouldn't want to bank on that. So you got to slow the game down and make it your kind of game. The thing about the Red Sox, a distinct lack of hunger coming into the year. Overconfidence.
Oh, my gosh. The idea that you could come in with as little emphasis on the regular season as they placed, is, in retrospect, astonishing. Because the bottom line is this. They thought they were going to show up and just be in the playoffs. Really, they did. I mean, they thought, well, you know, we'll show up. We'll be ready to play in late August. You know, mid-August, we'll turn it on. We'll win the games. We get a win. We'll coast until then. No problem. Like, all of a sudden, they're this highly accomplished, multiple championship group. And boy, are they getting humbled. They are getting their pants pulled down.
How do you feel about the Bruins so far in this series? How do you feel about the Red Sox? That's sort of self-evident. How do you feel about the Celtics? Jordan in Fall River, go on the Seas.
Oh, my God. How can anybody, any Celtic fan, feel happy about last night? I mean, I want to kick the damn TV. I want to kick every Celtic in the ass. Like, they're getting outplayed physically. Like, that's the only reason why down by 12.
Okay, so you cut out, but if I'm a green teamer, I don't feel great. I don't feel great about this. Indiana has no good players. None. I mean, I want to say good. Bogdanovich is good. He ain't great. They have no, they have nothing approaching, not even approaching an all-star on that team. And you're down double digits in game one and down 12 in the third, 12 in the fourth last night. Sean Grandy, the team broadcaster, Lucky the Leprechaun himself, tells you that you stole game one and game two against a wretched Eastern Conference team without their best player. How do you feel good about that?
You can't feel good about it. You can't. I mean, again, they should be wiping the floor with this team. They should be doing to them what they did in the final regular season game in Indiana, where they completely obliterated them, and that was it. Now, again, that was on the road, right? So they had to, it was more in the second half that they pulled away, but they played pretty well that night. You know, Indiana had a little jump. They were home. So now, look, they're up 2-0. If this thing somehow comes back 2-2, because the way they're playing right now, it's not out of the realm of possibility. What a colossal failure that'll be.
Could you make the case that if games one and two were on the road, they would have lost them?
Yes, absolutely. You can make that case.
Yeah, and I still think it'd be wrong because, again, they give you max effort, that Pacers team, night in, night out, like the Celtics did a few years ago. They just don't have enough talent to hang around and finish these games off. Sweep. Five games at best. Anything more than that, big ol' asterisk. It's a fail.
I mean, if it's possible, the Celtics could end up sweeping this series and making it harder on themselves than they should have. If it's possible, they may do that. These games are too close at the end.
So I'll tell you what. If they win like this on the road, I don't get on them for it. You win however you can win on the road in the NBA playoffs, you win. So I'm not like win ugly on the road. That's still a win. I'm not going to put the asterisk. These wins, fake wins, just about fake wins in a fake series, Murray.
Oh, it's totally a fake series. This is a pre-playoff tune-up is what this is. I don't count this. The playoffs start when they play Milwaukee.
Okay. My beef off of last night is, as usual, you and the reaction and the coverage of Kyrie Irving. This is my problem. I want to get to this and some post-game comments from him. You think people are taking the cheese on Kyrie Irving today, Murray?
God.
Are you taking the cheese on Kyrie? That's a topic.
Suckers.
That's a subject of next topic coming up right after these words.
This is Felger and Mass
on 98.5.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Boys and girls, I'm here today to present an exciting opportunity for togetherness.
Felger and Mass.
That's awesome.
Of course it is.
That's great.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Matthews turns the corner. The ball fake gets to the rim but misses in close. Horford has the rebound. Another chance for Boston to take the lead. It's Kyrie. Pull up. Three. Got it.
Man. Good God almighty. That man. Give him a mask because he just robbed a doggone bank.
All year long, he talked it. Tonight, he is walking it with his feet barely touching the ground.
It felt good to be here in this position, playing in this arena. You know, it's just been a long journey from having those two knee surgeries and watching the team last year and finally getting a chance to lace him up for the Boston Celtics in the NBA playoffs. It's nothing like it.
You're scoffing, Murray. How come you're scoffing?
Because everyone's eating it up. You suckers. It doesn't take much. He's in a good mood right now. Kyrie is in a great mood right now, and I can understand why, because everything's going his way. It's not that time of the month right now for Kyrie Irving, because there hasn't been any adversity for this team for a little while. It's the playoffs. This is the stage he loves. This is where he gets to shine. The lights are at their brightest. And he gets to shine while they're tuning up this terrible Pacers team and not really dealing with any kind of challenge. It's all good right now for Kyrie. So as he goes and his attitude goes, the team goes. We've seen this all season. You stick a mic and a camera in his face right now, he's going to reciprocate with a hit of the good stuff for Celtics fans right now. I feel good. You should feel good. I'll give you that ultimate green team high. Sure, man. Nothing like playing here. This is the best. Boston, this is the best. You're the best. I love it here. I love everything about it. I'm feeling good. You guys should feel good. You suckers. Talk to me in a couple of weeks when they're down 0-2 to Milwaukee. And then we'll take the temperature of this team and the mercurial one, Kyrie Irving.
I mean, seriously, talk about blowing a breeze right up your pants. Like, isn't that what Kyrie did last night? I mean, yeah. That comment, because think of the number of different ways he could have said that. Nice to be in the playoffs again. I love these games. I love the stage. Happy to be out there. This is what it's all about. But the way he said it, finally getting a chance to lace them up for the Boston Celtics.
Yeah.
Not just the playoffs. No, no, the playoffs for the Celtics.
You want a hit, guys? Oh, yeah, take a bump of that. Oh, yeah, give it to us, Kyrie. You suckers. It really doesn't take much. It really doesn't take much.
I mean, so it does. It appeals to the Celtics fan that is clinging to that shred of hope that he'll stay here because he wants to be with us.
Now, we know he's a giant pain in the ass, but I do think that he is smart, and he's smart enough to do exactly this. This is why I feel this way. He's playing right into your hands because he wants to right now, because he feels good and everything's good. Again, talk to me when they're down 0-2. And Golden State's down 0-2 to Houston, and Durant's calling him up. Man, this sucks. I can't wait to get to New York. How about you? Yeah, man. See you in a few months. Click.
Durant, by the way, hasn't finished two games. He got thrown out of the first game and he fouled out of the second one.
Yeah, Patrick Beverley's in his head. Like this, it's
or Durant's head is already in Manhattan.
Well, so that's true. Yeah, that could be too. I mean, there's no question. And look, Kyrie's been engaged in these games. Like, there's no two ways about it. Overall, I like what I've seen, but it is Indiana. But that comment, finally getting a chance to lace them up for the Boston Celtics in the NBA playoffs.
Laying it on a little thick, wouldn't you say?
There's nothing like it.
It's like he wrote a script.
Really, though. I mean, he's buttering you up. Oh, boy, is he buttering you.
Same guy. It was just a couple months ago. He walks into the building and says, I hate this effing bleep, man. I can't wait until this is over.
Which is why you can't put any stock in it.
Right. He goes as his attitude goes.
But you want to. I mean, seriously. And I admit I want to because I want him to stay. Because I think he's the difference in you being, ultimately, in a broad sense, the Indiana Pacers or being a championship threat.
Here's what I think. So this is closer to what bugs the crap out of me is hearing the coverage and the commentary on Kyrie after the game. See, this is why you have Kyrie. This is Kyrie's night. This is why Kyrie makes you better. This is, you think they're better without Kyrie? Well, suck on this. Well, look at this kind of game. This is why you have Kyrie Irving. This is the difference. And it's like, are you people stupid or you have no memories? Or you just, you
both.
This is exactly what a mediocre player like the mouthy little peanut used to do routinely. Routinely. Isaiah Thomas would go off against mediocre Eastern Conference competition in the playoffs. Isaiah had several games as good as that or even better. 53 against Washington, was it that one year?
Yes.
And remember, you all ate that crap up too to the point where you were chanting MVP. I mean, that is really, Celtics fans, of all the embarrassments that you put out there on a daily basis, that might be... That maybe takes the cake, but then again, maybe not. You have a sixth man retired in the rafters. But again, that's you. That's you. MVP for Kyrie Irving. Good. Anyway, when you faced mediocre Eastern competition at home in the playoffs, you got nights like this from Isaiah Thomas all the time. Hell, you even got it from Terry Rozier last year. Maybe not 37, but he gave you some fourth quarters. He gave you 20-point nights. In the playoffs?
Yeah, as long as it was home, because he was garbage in Milwaukee.
My point exactly. Yeah. My point exactly. At home against middling Eastern Conference competition? I've seen this a million times. You need Kyrie to do that? No, you don't. Bring back the mouthy little peanut. He did it. Give Rozier those minutes. He'll give you 80% of that, and you'll still win. So what has he done? The Kyrie victory lap or the Kyrie I told you so? You've got to be kidding me. Look, and I'm not telling you it won't come. This is the same thing as assessing the Kyrie trade. He's got to do something and take you somewhere you haven't been without him for me to say that he makes the difference. I just want to see it. I understand on paper that should be the way it goes. I get it. You should be better with him than without him, of course. I need to see it. So beating a crappy, crappy Indiana team at home where Kyrie goes off for 30-whatever is not any different than what you've been doing the last couple of years. Whether it's Isaiah time pointing at his watch or Scary Terry. I've seen this.
King of the fourth quarter.
I'm sorry?
King of the fourth.
Oh, yeah, right. King of the fourth. King of the fourth. You bring in some mediocre Eastern Conference team in the playoffs. I've seen this now. So now Kyrie's doing it. As Maz would say,
you really can't do it.
No? I can't do it. For the radio audience, I put my finger in my mouth. And
like a champagne cork.
Yeah. So you got a little point guard who went off against a horrible Eastern Conference team at home in the playoffs. Neat. I've been watching that for like 5 years with this team. Why do you need Kyrie for that? Bring back the king of the fourth. Or Isaiah for three. We've been through this. When Kyrie Irving, and I'm not telling you it won't happen. I'm not telling you he can't or won't do it. But when Kyrie Irving starts winning road games against the iron of the field and starts advancing you with road wins against good teams, and certainly if he takes you to the finals, then I'll say, because again, I'm fair. All right, now we've done something and the team has done something that you hadn't done before, and Kyrie was the difference. Simple. It's just the facts. It's just the results. Isn't that strange? I just base it on the results. So when that happens, if you get past Milwaukee and Toronto and you win road games and Kyrie's in the middle of it, then boom, tip of the cap. He makes the difference. Finally, we've seen it on the floor. They are better with him and he is the difference and he is, all that stuff. I'll concede because I'm fair. But last night, can we please? I mean, that's just silly. I've seen it from all your mouthy little point guards. I've seen it from more than one. So, not quite there yet. That's my thought on that. So, Celtics, Red Sox, and Bruins. How do I do it? Is there a key to it, by the way?
No, you're all weak cheeks Felger over there. You can't do it. You can't have tight cheeks like me and Maz.
No. Yeah, no.
You got tight in the cheek?
I think like you're not quick enough with your finger. Oh, my God, is that awful. Okay, so, you know, maybe your fingers aren't flexible enough.
I can't do it.
You need a composite finger.
Celtics, Bruins, and Red Sox. Jason in New Hampshire on the Red Sox. Go ahead, Jason.
Hey, I just wanted to touch base on the different things. A couple different things on the Red Sox.
Just give me one.
All right, they're pitching. I think their pitching is. I agree with Maz, and I don't agree with him too often when it comes to baseball. But they came out way too soft out of spring training, and I don't think they're going to keep going like this. I think they're too talented to keep going like this. But they started pitching off way too soft coming out of spring training in the regular season.
No question. So now you're 7 games under 500, 8.5 games out of first. You figure it out sometime in May, and you start going. But then where are you in the standings? At what pace do you have to win to make up that difference? And is your offense there? Because that hasn't been great shakes either. And in the meantime, has the losing given you some bad habits or some bad juice inside the room, and now you don't quite have the same feeling you had last year? And are you able to overcome it all when your pitching does get in order? And it will. It'll improve. Of course it will. But what's the lasting damage of the start, and what kind of shape are you in when that finally happens?
I mean, it puts you in a hole, and then mentally you start to think, we're never getting out of this. Like, you know, and look, call me a cynic, but last night, and I had the Red Sox on the smallest of my three screens last night. But when Workman started putting runners on in that seventh inning, I said to myself, you know, it would be just like them to have a relatively clean game and then have the bullpen puke on themselves for the first time this year, really.
So you basically, in your head, foretold it.
Yeah, pretty much. No, I saw it coming. I mean, that's how I am with the Red Sox, is I always prepare myself for the worst. Because you could almost feel like, oh, here it goes.
And that was unbelievable. Not just the loading the bases. Then what Brazier does.
He had him 0-2.
0-2. You haven't seen this yet, folks. You should. He has him 0-2, and he throws the biggest meatball down the middle of the plate you'll ever see.
Belt-high fastball that tailed right into the middle of the plate, and that Brett Gardner absolutely hammered. He freaking clubbed it.
It was a little bit of a Yankee Stadium cheapie.
No, it was, but he hit it right on the nose.
Horrible pitch.
It was a line drive. Horrible pitch is right. I mean, the only question to me is whether the ball was high enough off the bat, but he smoked it. He absolutely smoked it.
Ryan in Marlboro. Go ahead, Ryan. What do you got?
Hey, so I want to just say that Cassidy needs to do a better job of keeping the fourth line off the ice. They've been absolutely awful. You know what? Toronto has a really good fourth line. They're a lot quicker than they are. They were pinned in every time they're on the ice. Secondly, we have to do more things we were doing in game two. And I'm not even talking about the physicality. More so about getting pucks behind their D, which is cliche, but their defense still stinks.
Agreed.
Get it behind them, make them cough up the puck. We will get it out front, and that's how you put pucks in the net. Okay?
Agreed. Way too many plays on top of the faceoff circle. Way too many. Now, they scored on them. They actually scored on a couple of them in this game, but still, get it down low against Toronto. The first thing, the fourth line, doesn't have it without Corrali. It hasn't had it all series. They're getting too many minutes. 12 is too many.
So one thing that I thought the Bruins did do a better job of last night, and Cassidy talked about it too, was it felt like they were throwing pucks at the, you know, on net earlier in the process. So for example, the other night I was saying Marchand had one shot in game 3, 10 minutes into the game. That was it. Okay. In this game, he had 4. He had 5 others that were blocked and 2 that missed the net. So that's 11 attempts. And one of the theories is if you get the puck down there, we can then fight for it.
Right.
Right? It's the same concept, except that it's on net versus behind the goalie. Whatever. Just get them down there and then fight for the rebounds and fight for the pucks. And the game 3, they didn't really do that at all. It was annoying as hell.
We continue with your thoughts. How do you feel about the Bruins at this stage, Celtics at this stage, Red Sox at this stage? Do I even really need to ask that third thing? We've been those three topics all day. We'll take a quick Patriots minute for you right after Murray's update next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Maz.
Oh, schedule day. Oh, schedule day. Where fans get to pick wins and losses.
It's finally here, bro. The bad schedule. You ready to go over it?
Yeah, kid. Like last year, we got the joy of six. Now Brady and Belichick are going to take us to seventh heaven.
Yeah, week one, Sunday night, they raise the banner, and then they take on the Steelers.
It ain't right that they're playing on Sunday night. It should have been Thursday night. Goodell is screwing us again. It's a conspiracy.
Yeah, it is. Goodell's such a loser. Trump should try to get him fired.
Win and
Goodell. Look at this right here. Look at this. Weeks 2, 3, 4. At Dolphins, home against the Jets, and then at Buffalo.
Yeah, 3 straight weeks, 3 straight losers.
Win. Week 5. Maybe this could be our road trip, bro. At the Washington Redskins.
Hey, I told you before, I don't like that. It's offensive to the people whose land we stole.
Are you going soft on me, bro?
Nah, just kidding. I didn't want to see it change, and I don't want to grow as a person either.
Win. Week 6, Thursday night, at home against the New York Giants.
I still can't believe those refs didn't blow the whistle in Super Bowl 42. Eli was sacked. He was in the grasp. They should have blew the whistle.
You know that's Goodell.
It's always Goodell.
Win. Week 7, at the Jets.
Win.
Week 8, this is where it starts to look a little tough, bro. Home against the Browns.
Yeah, these Browns are already getting overhyped. I hate them. I hate Baker Mayfield. What kind of name is Baker? Like, what's he bake bread in his spare time?
Yeah, I bet it's soft bread, too. He's like soft bread.
Win!
Ah, it's a great time of year. That's half the schedule. We'll give you the second half next hour. No joke. They probably should be 8-0, 9-0 to start this year.
Oh, yeah, no, they got Lambs right out of the gate.
When you look at that schedule, it's what's the Browns at home?
Yeah, like that's the, they really.
I mean, that's week 8. At Baltimore's week 9. Other than that, Pittsburgh at home. That's usually a layup for you. I mean, you just went through it. Dolphins, Jets, Bills, win. Redskins, win. Giants at home on Thursday night, win. Jets, win.
Win.
Then I put you at 7-0 right out of the chute. Then you get Cleveland here. I'm sorry. They're not going to be ready.
Wait, can we start pounding 19-0 talk?
Well, I'm pounding 8-0 or 9-0 talk.
So the second Jets game, is that in New York?
Yeah.
I have them losing that one.
Monday night at the Jets?
Yep.
You right there on the schedule day, you had them losing?
No, on the schedule day, that was a joint script.
Okay.
But I'm telling you, me personally, yesterday when we went over it, I could see him losing that Jets game.
Okay, so we're just giving a quick Patriots minute here. If you want to do more, you can call us on it. Frank in Worcester wants to weigh in on the Pats. Go ahead, Frank.
What's going on, guys?
Frank, what do you got? What do you got?
Big Jim Murray, long time, first time. I'm going to give you guys a break. Pats.
Yeah. I'm going to let you go. You bugged me. I did. His comment line said Pat's draft. Do you have a Pat's draft thought just to give him something?
I would just tell you, I still want them to take a defensive lineman at the end of the first round and then take a quarterback in their next 5 picks. That's what I want.
Why do you want a defensive lineman first and then the quarterback?
Because I think they're weak on the defensive line.
And it's very deep at that position. Maybe that's the deepest position in this year's draft. So I would take a defensive player. I'd love a tight end, but bottom line is, for me, no quarterbacks.
Yeah, I'm not joking. I want a good defensive lineman. It's a deep draft for that, as Murray said. They have Michael Bennett, but, you know,
what if they like the quarterback? If you draft him in the first round, you get him for the 5th year. If they had done that with Garoppolo, you had a whole nother year with him.
True. Yeah, true. If there's a guy they love there, I'm not going to scream at it, but I don't think there's that kind of quarterback in this draft.
And I say, how does that help Brady? I will hate it. And that's why I say no quarterbacks. Yeah, I'm about the now, not the future. And despite you both, I want no quarterbacks.
My reasons are different than yours, Murray. I'm not looking to spite anybody.
Okay, I just want to do this because we mentioned this last couple days. Here's my last Patriots thought. Then we'll get back to the phones. Did you see the Kraft thing about how the judge put,
yes,
in, you know, put a temporary protective order on the video being released? Again, just to get you updated, the prosecutors down there said we have to release a video by state law. We are required to release this video because of our access laws down in Florida. They're very, very broad, meaning anything that the government has to be released to the public, including evidence that's accumulated in a criminal case, which means that they would have to release that video. So the prosecutors said that Kraft thing has got to come out, at which point Kraft's attorneys scrambled to court to try and get a judge to place a temporary restraining order on it, which they did. They got a protective order preventing law enforcement from releasing copies of video that, according to police, show Kraft twice receiving sexual acts at the massage parlor. Okay, so the way that's been portrayed here is that, oh, they got the guy, you know, they were stopped. They, you know, the prosecutors have no leg to stand on. Of course, a judge did it because it's not fair. Did you hear what the judge actually said in issuing the ban? The judge, Circuit Judge Joseph Marks, granted the order on Wednesday at an emergency hearing. The hearing included prosecutors, Kraft's defense lawyers, and members of the media who have requested copies of the videos under Florida's public records law. Per ESPN, Marks gave the following explanation for issuing the temporary ban. Quote, "I may be on shaky grounds, media." And I guess he's like sort of looking at the media that's in the room, in the court. He says, "I may be on shaky grounds, media, but right is right. To have this happen without a judge passing judgment on it is just wrong. So I am barring its release until this court, ... don't want this release until I've ruled." So they just gave you an exact transcript. But basically, he starts off by saying, "I may be on shaky ground," which is further indication that legally, by the laws on the books in Florida, Kraft has a real uphill battle in keeping this video squelched unless he just accepts the plea.
I mean, what the judge effectively said there is, look, I'm not sure I should be doing this, but...
What he's basically saying is, the law doesn't say I should do this, but I'm going to do it. For a judge to issue an order and to start out that order by saying, "I may be on shaky ground," that's just another indication that the law is against Kraft on this.
Yeah, it's not exactly a confident statement, was it?
See, he's basically admitting, this may not hold up. I may be on shaky grounds, but right is right. And I actually agree with him. Like, I don't know the law. You know, I read you that thing yesterday that says the law is pretty clear cut about what the public records laws are down there, and they're very broad. So that's the law, but I don't know the law. But right is right. A judge should rule on it. And so this judge, and it wasn't even Kraft's judge, it was a different judge, who offered the temporary order. But that was just an interesting way to say it. He says it in open court. I may be on shaky grounds, but right is right. I'm going to do this.
Yeah, the way I read it is the law probably doesn't support me, but here's what I'm going to do. So, I don't know. I told you, to me, it's not about the video. Like, I don't want to see, you know, it's not like I'm demanding that I see the video. But it does amplify what... Kraft could kill this thing so fast if he just agreed to the plea deal and the video would never see the light of day.
Okay, but he, you know, he wants to fight it. I'm also beginning to wonder about the video. Like, it's going to be pixelated. So we're not going to see, you know, we're not going to see the full Monty. It's going to be pixelated. So what's he hiding? I mean, if you've done nothing illegal and you're so adamant about that, is there something on the video that would lead me to believe that it looks like you're paying for sex? Or,
well, I have a bit of a description here from something called theblast.com. Jimmy just sent this to me and the rest of you.
We'll take it. We'll allow it.
Yeah. So the footage is already being shopped to multiple media outlets. The Blast was recently contacted by a party who claimed to have obtained portions of the actual video taken of Kraft from Orchids of Asia Day Spa and the massage parlor. Representatives of our news operation viewed the footage and upon watching can verify the tape appears to show Kraft in the massage parlor with another person, presumably the massage therapist. In the video, he is seen already undressed, laying on the massage table with his hands placed behind his head. Camera angle is an overhead shot. It's believed the camera was placed in the ceiling. Video sample we were shown was only a portion of the videos collected by authorities, but it was enough to verify it's legit. And that it's just some of the...
So this is already floating.
Apparently so, at least according to The Blast.
So there's one more thing. Remember, when the police went in there and installed their own cameras. Remember, I read this thing to you a couple weeks ago. You know what they found? They found cameras already installed, and they confiscated them. And they were cameras that were connected to these, to the operator's phone, so you could watch what was going on your phone inside your massage parlor. So the owner, the manager, and the people who ran the massage parlor already had cameras set up and were already receiving the videos on their phone. So there's whole there's that group,
sure,
of videos. Who knows what they contain? Maybe those have craft as well. So that may not even be the police video. Maybe it is. Who knows? I'm just saying. There's a whole nother. When I read that, I'm like, whoa. So there's now a whole nother ream of video that's out there on craft. But so that's sort of, you know, that's the illicit stuff. There's a whole legal thing, like the state is legally going to release a video because they say the law compels them to do it, and craft's fighting that. But then there's the whole black market thing that no one has any control over. So we'll see how that plays out.
So the, you know, again, with regard to the pixelation, if that's even a word of it, the whole thing. I just think he doesn't want anybody seeing his face.
He doesn't, and not just that. The handing of the money, I don't need to see the actual sex act. I get it. I've read the report. The hug and the handing of the money, how's that going to look? The dishing out of hundies on the way out of the massage parlor, that's probably not a great look. See, something as simple as that. But nope, nothing illegal. If someone is so adamant they've done nothing illegal, would you really care that much if a pixelated video comes out of you doing nothing illegal? So anyway,
If you're naked,
there's your Patriots update. It depends who you are, I suppose. Long commercial-free segment is next.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Making sense of Boston sports.
There's no catching and no throwing. Anyone can play, no matter how hopelessly unathletic they are.
Felger and Mez, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
And the right-hander deals.
Swung on, driven to deep right. It is high, it is far, it is gone. It's a grand slam. Let the Gardy party begin. Greg Gardner plants one in the right field. It is a grand salami. And the Yankees, down 3-1, now take a 5-3 lead.
That's how the Red Sox lose last night. They're up in the seventh inning. Workman loads the bases, and in comes Brazier. Gets Gardner 0-2, and then throws a meatball like you have to see it to believe it. I'll read Murray's email that began the day. He was fully caffeinated, ornery as usual. This is how Murray wrote it. The Red Sox are done. I'll declare it now. Never mind the fact the pitching sucks. Spin the wheel. Brah, ha, ha, ha. But look at that lineup. They have five, all caps, five players in their everyday lineup hitting 200 or less right now, with one more hitting less than 250. The only players even remotely hitting are Devers, who has an OPS under 700. And it seems like the only ones who are bothering to show up are Bogarts and Martinez. But more importantly, guess what else this collection of bitchy millennials just did? They just woke up the Yankees. Done. All caps. It's over before Easter. Period. Paragraph. Next take. They're done, Murray.
Yeah, they're done. They're done before Easter.
Do you agree with that, Mez?
No. God, no. No. I mean, I shouldn't say God, no. They're not that far from completely burying themselves. But there's too much talent there, and there's too much time left in the season for me to completely bury them. Now, that said, I mean, I'm not telling you April's a zero because I don't believe that April is a zero. April, you know, it matters in terms of building momentum, all of that. We gave you a million numbers on that last week when the record wasn't as bad as it is now, you know, and they had more time, all of that. So I just think that, you know, there's still too much time for them to turn it around.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be this bad. It's not going to be like 2012 where I'm openly rooting against them, or even 2014 where it was just, you know, it was a mess. they'll find their way, but I just think that they've dug themselves too deep of a hole, and the competition is for real, at least when it comes to the Rays and some of those teams in the American League West, that they're not going to end up making the playoffs, or it's just going to be an extremely difficult time for them to get that second wild card.
I mean, they've caught a couple of huge breaks here. Okay, one is that the Yankees have been really banged up, and they're only 8-9.
Okay,
that's one, and the other one is that Tampa just lost its ace.
Because he dropped a block of granite on his foot in the shower or something.
So now, look, I think Tampa's got a pretty decent team and they got a good staff. But that guy's a stud. So, you know, let's see what happens here if he misses, for, you know, the longer he misses. Because typically with an ace at the front of your rotation, it might not show up in a couple of weeks, but it'll show up a month or whatever.
At some point, the hole's too deep. At some point.
Sure.
So when is that?
It could be Monday. Depending on how this series plays out.
If they get swept, it's 12 behind, Murray, you've been saying?
Yeah. Oh, that's scary.
Is that it? If they get swept, is it over, Mass?
No, it's not over, because, again, too much time left.
No, if they get swept, I'll join Murray. If they get swept and they're 12 behind, that's it. Yeah, that's it.
I'm not convinced of that.
That's it.
I'm not. But if they're where they are now, a month from now, middle of May, well, then I'll be worried. Then I'll be really worried. I'm worried already. I'm not telling you I'm not worried. But in a month, if there's 10 back, well, then they're in big trouble.
Keeps getting worse. I mean, just the overall picture. Like, Eovaldi was better last night. There's little things you can point to and say. There's signs of life with Sale, signs of life with Eovaldi now, signs of life with J.D. Martinez, you know, blah, blah. But, like, that loss last night was wretched.
And killer.
And you have these ominous comments from David Price talking about pieces getting traded off.
And then there's this, where David Price says, if we don't turn around, some of us are going to be traded. I'll get you the exact quote here coming up in a second. But, Maz, how do you read those comments? How do you feel about those?
Okay, so look, I think he's right. I think some guys may be traded if they don't. And I'm not talking about in 3 weeks. But I think if you get to the deadline and you're 10 games under, well, the whole thing changes. Especially when you have a farm system that is a complete garbage, which theirs is. It's got to be an option. It has to be an option. And then that opens the door. And here's the other thing I like, that it's Price who said it. Because for a guy who's been around a long time, he's trying to give the team a little kick in the ass.
So Price says it's all about the pitching. We need to start doing it, starting in Tampa. And if we don't, .. And then he picks it up. If we don't start playing better, says Price, J.D. Martinez, Mookie Betts, maybe myself, we could get traded. We're what? 30th in minor league systems, end quote. So he even understands the big, broad dynamics in the organization.
Absolutely he does.
Okay. Yeah.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think this is a good thing? You take these quotes as a good thing?
I don't think it is a good thing.
Oh, okay, because this to me, and granted, I obviously have my slant on David Price, this sounds like a guy that realizes the clubhouse is a bit of a mess. We're not the same team. Might be hoping for it. I see the light at the end of the tunnel. I could get the hell out of here.
Oh, I didn't take it that way. I took it as him saying, no, we got a good group here. We like each other. But if we don't get our asses in gear, some of us are going to get shipped out.
So I think he's wrong. As I mentioned earlier, I don't think the Red Sox have the guts to trade Mookie Betts. They don't have the guts to do it. Could they trade Porcello in a contract year? Yes, of course. You know, could they trade Jackie Bradley? Yes. More of a marginal talent. Yes. They're not trading Mookie Betts. They wouldn't have the guts to do it.
Yeah, I'm not convinced of that.
And I don't think, isn't Price a five, is he a 10-5 guy yet? Is
not
five
yet.
Years? No, not quite.
Not yet.
Not quite.
Yeah, that would have to happen after he's only been in Boston 3 years.
Right.
So he hasn't been here long enough. So I'm just telling you with Mookie, if they were thinking about trading him in November or December during the offseason, why wouldn't you trade him at the All-Star break if you're 10 out?
Oh, I'm not telling you, I think they should do it. I think it'd be the smart thing to do. I'm telling you, they don't have the guts to dismantle this team.
Okay, but do you think that there's a chance that they would trade him in the offseason?
When you say him again?
Mookie.
I doubt it. I doubt it.
You don't think they'll trade him in the offseason if they can't sign him?
Nope.
Oh, I think they'd have to explore that.
Look, if he has a crappy year, then maybe. If he hits 240 or, you know, even 260 and falls way off and there's sort of a PR opening to trade a player who's overrated or struggling, yes, maybe. If Mookie Betts is playing well, they're not going to trade him. They don't have the guts. They should. They don't have the guts to do it.
Mike, if they can't sign him and they know they can't sign him,
they're going to let him walk.
Oh, they have to trade him at the end of the year. They can't do that. You can't get nothing for that guy.
They got nothing for Ellsbury. They got nothing for, they've got nothing for guys.
Yeah.
It's happened.
Ellsbury's not Mookie Betts. And they had a farm system then. They don't have one now. Like, you can't let that asset walk out the door and get nothing for him when you have one of the worst farm systems in baseball.
Okay, Red Sox on the table and the Bruins and the Celtics. How do you feel about them through their playoff series so far? After last night and through their playoff series, both won. Bruins even it up 2-2, get home ice back. Celtics are up 2-0. How do you feel about both teams? Short answer for me, not great. Not great on either. How about you? We'll get right back to you, I promise. Phones after Murray's 90-second update.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.